Today we're excited to have Hubris, owner of Social Identities, on today's podcast. For those of you who don't know Hugh, he's a dynamic individual, he's helpful, he's creative, and he'll actually let you know if you're doing something you shouldn't be doing on social media. And so what do I mean by this? Well, let's say you're running a Facebook contest without a third-party tool. He'll make sure to, you know, let you know about that in a friendly manner, but at the same time, he'll also offer up some suggestions or even point you to some of Facebook's documentation so that you can go about fixing this. So Hugh, welcome. We're really glad to have you on today's show.
Hi, Christian. Thanks. Nice to be here.
So you run a business called Social Identities. Can you tell listeners more about your business? What is it that you do?
Sure. Primarily, I'm a graphic designer. So the major focus of my business is designing graphics. I specialize in social media. So that means I'm designing graphics for social networks, also blogs. So I'm designing backgrounds for Twitter, headers and tab pages for Facebook, et cetera. I also offer consulting to people so that, especially if they're just starting out in social media, I try to get them off on the right foot and make sure that they're using it the right way for their business.
Personal branding is extremely important, and this applies not just for online businesses, but also for offline businesses. And Hugh has a lot of background in working with a number of major brands. So, Hugh, I wanted to see if you could tell listeners why it's important for a business to develop that cohesive brand across their social media channels.
Okay. So, I think a good percentage of the people that I work for already have an existing brand. Their company's been around for a while. They probably have a logo. They probably have some sort of an identity package. They've got corporate colors they're using. They probably already have maybe a look and a feel or a style. So their website, their blog, their packaging already has an existing theme. In those cases, my job is basically to make sure that I continue the identity onto social. I do have a good percentage of clients that are just getting started and don't really have an identity. In those cases, I help them create one. But whether they have one that I'm starting with or I'm helping them create one from scratch, once their identity has been established or their brand has been established, then, I think it's my job to help them make sure that it's stays the same everywhere. You know, I think the worst thing that can happen is that you put up a Twitter page and put a background up or your logo on there, and then you come out with a Facebook timeline cover or tab page and you use a different version of your logo or different colors. Or, if you're using a theme, if you're an insurance company and your theme is to always show pictures of happy families, playing with a pet in the front yard or something to represent your company, you want to make sure that that style follows everywhere. You're always going to use the same style pictures, same colors, et cetera. So I think it's important, starting from your website or your blog all the way through every single possible social page that you have, you want everything to look like it all belongs to the same group.
So if somebody has developed that brand for their business, how does this apply if, say, I'm an individual and I actually am the business? Do I also need to consider branding there as well?
I guess it depends on what you mean by individual. I think people that are using Facebook just to share pictures and information with their friends don't have to worry about branding. If you mean an individual that's running a business, then I don't think it matters whether you're a one-man company or, a 1,000-man company. It's still important. And it's probably more important if you're an individual sole proprietor, because in those cases, your competition is probably pretty fierce. And a lot of times you want to look bigger than you are. You want to give the impression that you're not just a guy sitting in an extra spare bedroom running your business. So it's pretty important for even that person to make sure that they have a professional logo, they have a professional look, they maintain a professional attitude, they have a deal with their clients professionally in public. That's all part of their brand, but it definitely, and they want to make sure that at some point they don't mess it up, because once you mess it up, it's real hard to fix it.
A lot of people will argue that, hey, you know what? I've got a Mac and I've got some graphics software. I can create my own logo. What is the value proposition of having a professional create one of these for you? Can you elaborate a little more on that process?
Sure. They could go to Fiverr. You know, there's plenty of guys out there that'll design a logo for you for $5 on Fiverr. In a lot of cases, I think you probably get what you pay for. Somebody may be going through a clip art book and or going through a design book and selling you a logo for $5 that you later find out's you know, been copied from some company and it's copyrighted, and all of a sudden you're dealing with a lawsuit. But you know, so no, I don't think you have to spend thousands of dollars. Yeah, there's a famous story back when Steve Jobs got kicked out of Apple. He went out and started a new company called Next. And he hired a very famous designer that was very well known. And the Next logo, I don't know if everybody remembers it because it was a long time ago. It was basically a square sort of on its side, and it was multiple colors, and it had an N on one side and an E on the other. So it was like a cube with the letters NEXT on the different faces. And they paid $100,000 for that logo. Of course, he started out with a huge budget in the beginning anyway. But, you know, realistically, I'm sure that there are plenty of designers out there that could have designed a logo that was just as good for, you know, a couple hundred dollars. So, it may be relative, like you say, depending on the size of your company and the budget, and maybe whether you think it's important to be able to brag that you had a world-famous designer do your logo rather than a college kid. But, I think you just want to make sure that the person you're hiring to do the job isn't copying something, or they're actually doing something original. And then as far as how good it looks, obviously that's always subjective, but I think you don't want to go down to the local print shop and ask them to design a logo for you for $35 if you're planning on, you know, you're a new startup and you're hoping that someday you're going to be the next Instagram.
So now I wanted to switch gears into a few social media related questions. The most frustrating thing about Facebook is what?
The problem I have with Facebook is that they just don't they beta test everything on the general population. They don't seem to have a focus group or a group of beta testers to try things out. They disseminate it to a few thousand people and see if it works, and then they give it out to a few more people. And right now we got some people with the new news feed. My daughter's had it for a couple months. I still have the old news feed. Some people are all excited because they've got the new insights. I still have the old insights. I just got the new graph search about a month ago. Other people have had it for months. There's all kinds of variations out there of what people have. I know when they switched the personal profiles from the two column to the single column, that took us, months before everybody had the same exact format. And then when they'd make the changes, except for the fact that they have a big press conference to announce graph search, and they had another one when they announced the new newsfeed, it still takes them 6 months to actually start coming out with it. But for the most part, the changes they make, there's never an announcement. And, you sort of stumble on it as you go. And in some cases, I think it definitely gets frustrating, trying to decide what size to make your pictures so they look good everywhere. Should my picture be square so it looks good on my business page? But no, because now if I make it square on my business page, it's not going to look good on somebody's newsfeed because it's horizontal. It's not going to be square. They're going to stretch it horizontally and then crop the top and the bottom off of it. The new newsfeed is wider than the current newsfeed. So, what size do we upload our pictures at? It'd be nice if everything was the same for everybody. And it would be nice when they make a major change, or at least something that affects businesses, if we had a little more obvious announcements, like when they removed the rules for the timeline covers. There were a few weeks that went by where people were still saying they thought it was a mistake. And it took a couple weeks before people actually believed that, okay, it's really true. And then a couple weeks ago, they took away the 20% rule for the timeline covers. There was no announcement about that. You just kind of somebody stumbled on the looking at the rules one day and notices, hey, the 20% rule is not there anymore. But, I do keep a very close watch on the rules, especially, because I am designing contest apps for people and stuff. So I, since I'm being paid to do a job, I pretty much have to know that I'm doing the right thing so I don't get somebody in trouble. So I tend to keep up with the rules pretty closely. So when they do change, even if they're subtle changes, I tend to notice them pretty quickly.
A lot of networks today are copying from one another. For example, Facebook introduced Facebook hashtags, Instagram video now competes with Vine video, etc. Where do you see social media headed? Is there going to be maybe a Google Twitbook or something in the near future?
I doubt there's ever going to be a super conglomeration of all of them. I just think there's too many ways that people like to use things. You know, some people love the idea of Twitter, 140 characters. You know, you type out a quick little sentence and you send it out there. People that want to talk more or share more than they can say in 140 characters, they think it's constraining. You know, they hate Twitter. They like Facebook. They can talk more. Google Plus, you know, they can – I think that, what, the character limit on Facebook's 5,000 characters or 50,000 characters or something. So you can pretty much write a book. You know, and I think if you look at – or if you ask a bunch of people in a room what's their favorite, they're all going to have a different one, and they're all going to have a different reason why. So how would you come out with, you know, one giant social network that everybody was happy with? You know, I don't think it's possible. I think – and then, you know, I guess another question would be, do I – think it's possible that somebody else is going to come out with another one. You know, Facebook's probably going to be one of the last people to luck into that. And I think the only reason they lucked into that is because they came out with something right around the time that people were really getting disgusted with MySpace. And, you know, I think it was just a case of incredibly good timing. MySpace is, you know, trying a new iteration and trying to relaunch themselves from the ashes, and maybe they will. They're sort of focusing on music more than just something that everybody would use. So, you know, maybe it'll work out. And the people that have been using MySpace for years, I mean, they're still adamant that they like MySpace. So, and then Google Plus, you know, they've tried to enter social a couple times. Wave was a, you know, dismal failure. I thought Google Plus was definitely going to go the way of Wave, but, you know, so far they seem to be hanging on. I don't know. You know, whether they'll, yeah, sure, you look at the numbers and it looks like there's a lot of people using it, but I just don't see the evidence of that when I look at the engagement and stuff over there. But, you know, the people that like Google Plus, man, they, you know, they love it. And for a lot of the reasons they like Google Plus, they don't like Facebook. The people that really love Facebook, you know, for the reasons they love Facebook, they may not like Google Plus. So, I don't think we're going to see too many new ones come up. I think what's going to happen is pretty much what we're seeing happen. Every time somebody comes out with something new, Instagram, it's cool. It's a new app. Everybody's using it. Sooner or later, boom, they get snapped up. You know, Facebook buys them. Foursquare or Gowalla was purchased by Foursquare, I guess. I mean, Facebook. You know, so I think it's going to be hard for anybody to come up with something new and compete long enough to eventually be standing head and shoulders with the big dogs. But, you know, maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe people right now should, instead of trying to come out with the next Twitter or the next Facebook, come out with something that complements one of those and then hope that, you know, they buy it from you for $1 billion. I think, you know, sure, if you just started out on Facebook and you don't like it, it's probably not going to be a major problem for you to go start fresh on Google Plus. But, you know, if you're a big company or a small company, but you've established a following on Facebook and you've got, you know, thousands of fans and you're producing good content that they all like, the idea of just telling them one day that I'm closing shop and I'm all going to Google Plus and you either got to follow me there or, you know, can't follow me at all, doesn't really seem a smart decision. You know, what I tell people is I think you need to be where your customers are. And in most cases, that's going to be one of the major social networks. There's lots of smaller ones that you might want to consider if you have the time. But, you know, I think most people are going to focus on the four or five major places. You know, Pinterest is in there now. Instagram's kind of becoming a popular way for people to market or promote themselves. But realistically, you know, who has the time to focus equally well on a lot of them, you know? But I think if you're on Facebook and you're not on Google Plus and as a company, you know, you're probably missing out. You know, whether you happen to personally like it a lot or not, you have to remember that it's your customers that matter. You know, if they like it, that's the important thing. If they like it and they're there, then I think you need to be there. I think this, you know, with social media, if, you know, to me, I thought the Facebook cover rules were absolutely ridiculous. I, you know, can't imagine why Facebook is telling me as a business that I've created a business page. You know, I'm not using a personal profile to conduct my business. I've actually created a business page like I'm supposed to. And that page has the name of my business. And I'm using that to, in one way or another, market or promote my products or services. If I'm doing that, why are they tying my hands behind my back about how I can do it? And in the timeline cover, it just made no sense to me to say, you can't put your phone number up there. Well, why not? I mean, I just never understood who was going to be offended if somebody had a phone number in their timeline cover, or you couldn't put your URL up there. They said, oh, it's perfectly acceptable over there on your about page. Well, yeah, but the problem is somebody's got to click a little link that says about and go to my about page to find out my phone number or find out what my website link is. You know, there's no obvious links directly on there. I can't link a tab button to my website. At least I'm not supposed to. So why couldn't I put the URL in my timeline cover? So, you know, for a long time, I had my URL in my profile photo, right there in the bottom of it. For a while, I had click here in the bottom of my profile photo with an arrow pointing directly over to my like button. They said I couldn't put the arrow in my timeline cover, but they didn't say I couldn't put it in my profile picture. You know, so I kind of was pushing the envelope on a lot of that stuff. I never followed the 20% rule except for my clients, unless they specifically told me I didn't have to. But for mine, you know, I've been 40 or 50% text with my cover for a long time. You know, was I taking a chance that they're going to slap my wrist? Yeah, but I was hoping they weren't going to, you know, like completely throw me out. At the very worst, I assumed that one day I'd look at and find out my timeline cover was gone and I'd have to put up a new one. Yeah, and they do that on a regular basis on personal profiles for people that are using copyrighted stuff. Like if you got, you know, pictures of from a Disney movie up there or something, one day you're going to find out it's gone. But they're not going to shut down your profile. I don't think it's a big enough offense to completely close a page just because somebody put an arrow in their timeline cover. And yet we all, you know, for the most part, tried to comply by the rules. No calls to action, no arrows pointing directly to the like button. You know, 20% text, another ridiculous rule. You know, 20% isn't really that bad if you calculate it correctly. You know, in the beginning when we were all questioning, hey, how are they figuring out what 20% text is? A lot of us were saying, well, they're probably doing it on a pixel basis. So we went out and calculated how many pixels were in the timeline cover and then take, okay, what's 20% of that? And then all you had to do was, you know, draw a box around the areas where you had text, calculate the pixels, and if it was less than 20% of the total number of pixels, we figured we were okay. And if you do it that way, 20% was actually a reasonable amount of text. Well, that's not how they do it. They had a 25 grid box, five rows and five columns, and if your text appeared in more than five of the 25 boxes, it was over 20%, even if it was something silly like one letter. So, to me, that just seemed kind of silly. Now, why should I sit around and say, oh, woe is me, you know, this is terrible, but I'll fall, you know, I don't know. I complained about it a lot. I posted about it. You know, maybe that's why I don't have the new news feed, you know, because I complain too much. I don't know. Same thing with EdgeRank. You know, I've been ragging on EdgeRank for a long time. You know, I still think it should be some sort of an optional thing. There was a period a few months ago where there was some kind of a snafu in the system and everybody's news feed was showing everything. And the funny thing was, everybody was noticing that, hey, it's not really as out of control as Facebook says it's going to be, you know. And then it wasn't too long, and they fixed the problem, and you know, the algorithm kicked back in, and they started showing us not all of what everything. And then if you're going to do that, if you're going to have an algorithm and say, okay, well, you know, we think your newsfeed's going to be completely unreadable if you see everything, single thing that your friends and the pages you follow post. So, you know, we're going to calculate which ones we think you're going to want to see, and we're going to hide the rest. If they're going to do that, then don't have an option on there that says all posts. You know, I mean, when you like anybody, that the default setting on your timeline, and I, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but when you go to a timeline and you mouse over the liked button, the default setting is most posts. So there's one setting up from that, which is all posts. So if you're noticing that you're not seeing as many posts as you would hope from a page that you've liked, if you go to that page and mouse over the like button, you'll see that you're set at most posts as the default. If you change it to all, you'll definitely start seeing more. But to me, the word all means 100%, and all to Facebook doesn't mean 100%. It just means most. So all means most, and most means quite a few. I think if you don't complain and you figure, hey, it's free, they can do anything they want, I just have to live with it, things aren't going to get changed. And I don't think the changes to the timeline cover with the rules being taken off, you know, I don't think it was me alone that caused that to happen, but I'm thinking that I might have been part of it, along with several other thousand people that complained about it as well. You know, they wouldn't have changed it if it wasn't obvious to them that a lot of people didn't like it. Yeah, if you want to talk about it's like something that doesn't make sense, and something that I'm hoping that the people that are complaining about it, at some point somebody at Facebook does do something about it, is the replies to comments. And I've turned mine on for a couple of days because I was super excited when I knew it was coming out. I thought it was really going to be cool. So it came out, I turned it on, and I had it for a couple of days. And it didn't take me more than a couple of days to figure out that it really sucked. You know, you post a comment and somebody replies, now they can nest that reply under your comment. Well, that's great, because now I don't have to, you know, I'm not going to be a guy commenting 10 comments below your comment and then tagging you by name so that you know I'm answering you, even though I can't answer you directly below your comment. Now I can click the little reply button right under your comment, and when I comment or reply to your comment, you know I'm talking to you. You know, yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. If you look at Facebook on blogs, that's the way it works. You know, it's nested. Discuss does it the same way. The problem I have with it is that somebody decided that we should rearrange the order of comments based on popularity. So when you comment, your comment is not going to stay in chronological order if enough people are liking somebody else's comment, because their comment's eventually going to move above yours. There's a very good chance that that's going to take your comment completely out of context when that happens. The other problem with it is that right now replies to comments doesn't work at all on mobile. So when you're looking at mobile, you see everything as comments in chronological order, but some of those are actually replies to other comments. And because of the fact that Facebook took that comment that was replied to and moved it to the top of the list because it's more popular than the other comments, takes that comment completely out of context when you're trying to follow it on mobile. The other problem with it is as an admin, when you get notified when somebody comments, it may have changed recently, but it didn't used to. It wouldn't jump you down the list to the comment. It just took you to your comments, and you had to start looking through the replies to figure out which reply it was that you got the notification for, in assuming that you wanted to go back and reply to it. So you know, my question, I posted this on my Facebook page the other day as an open letter to Mark Zuckerberg. And, you know, my question was, what nitwit came up with that idea in the first place? And then what group of nitwits approved it? Because, you know, I can't imagine, I haven't talked to anybody yet that thinks it's a good thing that they take comments out of chronological order. And then they came in with, okay, enough people were complaining, and I think they listened a little bit. So now they've got that little drop down where you can select to see top comments or most recent. But the problem is the default setting is for top comments. So you still, if you're reading, you know, a lot of posts, as you're reading those posts, you still have to click that button to order the comments chronologically, if that's how you prefer to read them. I don't know why the default wouldn't be chronological and then let me, if I want to, click and do it. But I still, no matter how I analyze it, I can't imagine the person that came in to a meeting one morning and said, hey, you know, I got an idea for the replies. How about if we change the order based on which one is the most popular? I can't imagine why somebody thought of that in the first place, let alone walked into a group of people, and when they presented the idea, that group of people all went, whoa, that's pretty good. You know, let's take a show of hands. Who thinks it's a great idea? I'm just baffled by that one. People that haven't figured out the reply part yet. And even personally myself, because I have it turned off for my page. When I go to somebody else's page that has it turned on, a lot of times I'll forget to reply. You know, I'm replying to somebody's comment, but I'll do it the old fashioned way, or the way I do it on my page, which means I tag them so that they, you know, they get a notification that I replied to them, but I forget to click the reply button. So, you know, until everybody's doing it, it's probably going to be, that's going to happen. And right now I know there's a lot of pages that have turned it off, you know, like mine, because I just personally, I don't like it. And I'm pretty sure that most of my fans don't like it. So I'm not going to subject them to something, until they figure out a way to fix it. And I don't think that the little option to select top or most recent, you know, personally, I don't think that that is enough of a fix to make me go add it back in, on my page now. I think the other thing that, you know, originally I thought it would help add to the conversation because more people might be inclined to come back and continue talking, rather than just doing a drive-by comment. You know, so I read a post, I go, oh, that's pretty interesting, and I have a comment, so I comment, and maybe somebody comes in and replies to me, and maybe they tag me, so I get a notification, so I go back to see what they say. They said, you know, I may reply to them in another comment, but I don't know that that lasts as long. Like on a blog, you know, you'll see blogs that if you don't turn comments off at some point, the comments will go for years, you know, because people are finding them on search engines and coming, you know, finding a two-year-old blog post, and they read it, and they go, they want to comment. And when they comment, that sort of reactivates, even if it, you know, hasn't been commented on for a month, all of a sudden new people come in and start commenting. So I was sort of thinking that the replies would help that, you know, help our discussions last longer, keep people coming back, you know, after I post something and ask a question to start a discussion, you know, it's kind of nice when it lasts for a while and it doesn't die out in 15 minutes. But I think the problem is having the reverse effect, because the way replies work, you, when you're looking at the comments, if there's, say, 15 replies to a comment, you don't see all the replies. You have to click. It says 15 replies. You have to click it. Then it drops down and it shows you those 15 replies to that comment. Most people aren't going to take the time to click that. They're just reading the comments. So all the people that replied to a comment that might be saying some very interesting things, what they're saying is not being seen by the majority of people, because I think most of them aren't going to take the time to click the number to see what those what those replies were. So, you know, realistically, I don't think that it did help the conversation.
You run a little group, and it's actually a rather large group, Social Identities on Facebook. I'm a member. I love, you know, the interaction between group members. It's definitely a very unbiased place to go if you have questions. How can others get involved?
Group is facebook.com/groups/hubris, H-U-G-H-B-R-I-S-S. And that's the social identities group. Right now we got 1,179 members. And you know, it's a good group. The people that are there are more than happy to answer questions. So if somebody wants to ask a question or start a discussion, it's not just somebody waiting for me to come answer. The community is taking care of it too. So, you know, anybody that asks a question there, as opposed to trying to ask a question on my Facebook page where it shows up in the post by others box and pretty much nobody's going to see it but me anyway. You know that when you post it in the group, everybody sees it. Some people are, you know, more of an expert on some topics than others. So there's plenty of times somebody in the group knows the answer better than me anyway. So it works out real good. And to join the group, it's just a matter of, you know, asking to join and then my approving you. The vetting process, I mean, I was kind of joking, but I do kind of do a little bit. If I see a name that looks sort of fishy, like I think you knew about this one, some guy spammed the group the other day and his name was like Tommy, and then his middle name was I'll make it without you or something, Smith. Yeah, I mean, when I saw that name, I kind of thought, you know, sounds a little funky. So I went and looked at his profile. I was a little bit suspicious based on what I saw on his profile that, you know, probably a good possibility he was a spammer. But, you know, I hate to be accused of profiling either. So, you know, I approved him, and then it couldn't have been more than 5 minutes after I approved him, he came in with a major spam. And then, you know, I do keep the group locked down pretty tight, so I have a zero tolerance for spam. I have – the rules are very clearly stated. And, you know, so our group, it's – you don't – what you see in a lot of groups is a lot of, you know, self-promotion and stuff going on. We don't have any of that. So, you know, I think it's a good group, and it's not hard to join. It's open. You know, there's been – I've sort of gone back and forth between the idea of an open or closed group, but for right now – it's open, and I think it works good that way.
If people want to hire you to design their social media branding for their sites, where can they contact you at?
Okay, my website is socialidentities.com, and there's a link to my portfolio. There's I have my prices there. They can find out everything they need to know. My email address is hugh@socialidentities.com, and then I have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/mysocialidentity. And then there's the group that we've been talking about.
If you could provide one piece of advice for Facebook users, what would it be?
I think the one thing that I would say right now, that now that there pretty much are no rules for timeline covers, I think everybody should take full advantage of that fact. That means I don't think it's going to be a good idea to make your timeline cover look like a typical ad that you might see in a magazine or a newspaper for a tire place that says, you know, buy three tires and get one free, and they've got a big burst over on the side here with sale $99.95. You know, I'm not encouraging people to go out there and turn their timeline covers into some ridiculous looking advertisements, but I still think, if it's going to take more than 20% worth of text to get your logo, your tagline, and maybe a sentence about what you do and what the purpose of your page is, you know, I think you definitely should take advantage of that fact. I think a call to action, I can't imagine if you have something, an ebook, an app somebody can download, anything like that, you know, not taking advantage of the timeline cover to let people know about that is, you know, a mistake. If you have an app that you can download, you can real easily create a tab page, you know, with promotion, you know, screenshots talking about the app, letting everybody know about it. And then you can have a link to the Google Play Store or the App Store. And then when you add that tab, you'll have a nice little tab button that appears below your timeline cover. And if you in that tab button put download my app, I don't see a problem with, you know, putting a little blurb in the timeline cover that says, you know, download our app and point an arrow down to that download button or something. You know, on mine right now, if everybody goes to my page, facebook.com/mysocialidentity, I'm running a 10% discount on my design services. So right in my timeline cover, I've created what looks like a three-dimensional button that says click here for discount. And I'm utilizing the timeline cover in that case almost like a banner. So when somebody sees my timeline cover, and they see an obvious call to action and something that looks like a button, even if they didn't realize that they could click that timeline cover, you know, I'm hoping that they will. And if they do, the timeline cover opens in your photo viewer where you can add a description for the photo. So that description, in my case, is explaining the 10% discount, and I've got a code that they can get, and then I've got a link to my website and a link to my order page. Mari Smith, I think, right now is running a webinar, or maybe she's promoting a book, and she's doing that right in her timeline cover, and she too has an obvious button that somebody can click, and when they click it, opens in the photo viewer, and she's got, you know, plenty of text describing it right there in the description and a link where somebody can go download it. Also, the other thing, as far as using the timeline cover as a banner, when every time you update your timeline cover, it goes out in the newsfeed of all your fans. It, even if the cover has a description, unlike when you post an update with a photo and then you have some text to go along with it, that photo and the text are going to show up in the newsfeed. When you update your timeline cover, the cover image will show up in the newsfeed as a graphic, but the text that you have attached to it as a description won't show up. It'll just say Social Identities updated their timeline cover, and it'll have the timeline cover. But if you add that button, like in my case, it says click here for discount, or you know, click here to download our app. When somebody sees that in their newsfeed, and it looks, it's going to look just like a banner, and it's going to say click here. If they click that in the newsfeed, then it will open in the photo viewer, and then they will see the description along with a link where somebody can download it. So it almost gives you, now that we can put a call to action up there, it gives you an opportunity to turn that timeline cover into a clickable banner. And if every time you have a discount, every time you have a special that you want to promote, all you do is update your timeline cover, update the description that goes along with it, and as soon as you update it, it's going to show up as basically a clickable banner in the newsfeed of all your fans.
Hugh, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today's podcast. For those of you listening, if you haven't connected with Hugh, be sure to do so. And don't forget to join the Social Identities Facebook group. There's a lot of great information there. This concludes our podcast with Hugh Briss, owner of Social Identities. If you would like to be a featured guest on our next podcast, visit christiankonline.com/contact. Thanks, everyone.